A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Tired.
So
tired. How are you?
I'm okay. I had that thing this morning where I sort of kept waking up from probably, like, you know, 7 o'clock onwards, but in a nice kind of way, where I was conscious enough to appreciate the fact that I was lying in bed sort of half asleep, you know? Like, you can't appreciate being asleep when you're asleep because you're asleep, but I was awake and I appreciated it.
That's true. I like that. I don't mind that, pardon my French, tossy and turny.
Yeah.
Sleep when you're in bed and it's like you check that you don't have to get out of bed straight away when you wake up.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, this is fine. I'm feeling comfortable. I'm not looking at the clock because I'm stressed about oversleeping something.
Yeah.
That's pretty good sleep.
It was good. Yeah. Sorry to boast, given that you're so tired.
No, that's fine. I just couldn't get to sleep. I had lots of issues getting to sleep. And then I woke up a few times this morning. And then when I did wake up, I felt like an actual literal zombie.
Oh, how spooky. I mean, we are recording this just before Halloween. So.
You are correct. This is technically our Halloween episode, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I totally forgot until right now. Most of our questions are spook-related. In fact, I think all of them are spooky gaming-related questions. Yes, this is a video game podcast. We get a sponsor each and every week, don't we?
We do indeed, yeah.
And it's real.
And Ben has got an ad read to read right now.
I certainly have. This is actually a relevant, spooky-related advert. This week we are sponsored by a special edition Xbox that's coming soon.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And it's called the Xbox Series X.
Oh, that's scary. That's really scary.
That is, right? It's spelled, X is spelled E-X, as in X. Your ex.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it's a spooky Halloween console edition that makes the sound of one of your ex-partners whenever you eject a disc or turn it on.
What kind of sound?
I don't know, just something just their voice. Not necessarily saying something horrible or spooky, it's just sort of...
A bit
mentally and emotionally draining to hear it, where it's like, oh, man. I really could have done without hearing that now.
Do they do different versions that, like, it's a bit like in Silent Hill, how the monsters are tailored to your own fears. Like, they do some where that you press the eject button and she says things like, I still love you. Or if that's what's really going to get you. Or, like, you press the button and she goes, like, I'm so glad I'm rid of you. I'm banging away with someone else now.
See, I could handle that because that wouldn't bother me. And the I still love you one, I think that would be more weird than scary. I think it's just a constant reminder. If it was just, hello, my name is name of ex-partner, and it would be like, oh man, I just want to play some Gears of War, you know? I don't want to be hearing that. So that's the spookiest edition Xbox coming. It's the Xbox Series X, as in EX, as in ex-partner. Or girlfriend or boyfriend or other, and you'll be able to buy it today, I suppose.
Oh, wow, brilliant.
Why not?
Well, I won't be. That sounds horrible.
No, I don't know. I don't think they really thought this through. I don't know if there's a market for a console that emotionally punishes you every time you turn it on.
In fact, for one of the first times ever with a sponsor that we've had on this show, I almost hope that one is fake.
Oh, well, I mean, it's real. It's totally real. Where are we walking this week, Peter? Only joking.
Really, no, that's not real.
It's not real. Our real sponsors, obviously, are over at patreon.com/TeamTripleJump, where for as little as $1 per month, that's about 25 American cents per week, you can get access to the podcast. Not only supporters, obviously, but you can get access to the podcast post and submit questions to this podcast that we will answer. We have other tiers available, and your financial support really does help us because we rely on YouTube, and YouTube is crap. It demonetizes us for stupid things. And then videos we've been working on for ages, we don't make any money off them. It's like, well, that was a complete waste of bloody time, wasn't it, YouTube?
Oh, my God. You really got a bone to pick with that there, YouTube.
Oh, spooky skeleton.
A spooky bone, yeah.
Spooky bone. Where are we walking this week, though, Peter? Somewhere spooky?
This week we're walking across a full-size picture of one of Editor James's exes. just a photo of her face.
Okay, I'm editing this one, so I'll have to call him on his day off.
Yeah.
And ask for a photo of one
of his ex.
Which I'm sure his lovely partner would be thrilled about that he still has access to somewhere.
Maybe just some eggs then. Just walking across.
Famous Halloween eggs.
Eggs, yeah.
Oh, I see. Mm. Okay. I'm going to Google Halloween eggs and I'll use that image that's almost certainly copyrighted. And we'll see how far we go with that. Okay, question one, Peter. Who have we got?
Question one is from Dan Scott, two first names. He says, hello, Peter and Ben. It actually says, hello, Ben and Peter, but I got a bit mixed up.
Oh, my goodness. That's okay. You can editorialize.
Hope you guys are having a spooky time. I find it fascinating that after nearly 25 years, Resident Evil and Silent Hill are still leading the way when it comes to being king or queen of horror. And in my opinion, only Dead Space has proven to be a challenger to the throne. Sure, games like The Evil Within, Until Dawn, FNAF, and Outlast have been successful, but I don't feel like any of them can claim to be as iconic as the old boys. Do you think it's a struggle for newer horror franchises to leave their mark? And were we spoiled with how fantastic Resident Evil and Silent Hill were back in the 90s? Love you both. Oh, we love you too, Dan Scott.
Love you too, Dan and Scott. The two men stacked on top of each other in a trench coat.
In a big trench coat so they can get into the 15-plus films at the cinema.
Go see Dodgeball at the cinema.
So they can go and buy a copy of Resident Evil. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. We were spoiled, weren't we?
We were spoiled. I think that's definitely the case. And I do think we were spoiled by Resi and Silent Hill. I think what's maybe important to bear in mind is that, you know, some people might say, they just happened to be the first kind of spooky horror games on a 3D console. And that's why they've stuck. And anyone really who'd done a half-decent horror game would have had the same thing if they'd got in there first. But, I mean, there is other stuff from the time that hasn't stuck in the same way. You know, Dino Crisis, for example. I know they're not typically horror enemies. They're not, like, sort of ghoulish monsters. But it was marketed under panic horror rather than survival horror.
Mild horror.
Yeah. There are other games from the time that I can't even think of now because Resi and Silent Hill were so good, and that is why they've stuck. I don't think it's just a case of they were the first ones on PS1, so that's why. I don't think that's true. Mm. I think there is something to be said for their quality as much as right place, right time. But, nowadays, it probably is the case, I would say, that it maybe is harder for newer horror franchises to come along. I think, for a start, a lot of things have been done now. You know, it's quite hard to be innovative in horror. I think the ones that Dan Scott mentioned, you know, some of those maybe have left more of an impression recently than others because they were trying something new. You know, Five Nights at Freddy's is quite a unique game. Whether we like it or not, or you like it or not, whatever. Like, it's got a USP. You know, Outlast as well. I know it's not the first game ever to have a camera thing, or you can't attack the enemies mechanic in it, but it certainly used those things very well. So, yeah, I think nowadays they really have to have a USP, whereas maybe the one thing that Resi and Silent Hill and maybe a couple of other games since then in the early days had in their favour was that not a lot of things had been done yet on console, so you could kind of, you could do a zombie game or a vampire game or a werewolf game and it would probably be, you know, fairly well received because it would be the first one of that kind, certainly on the 3D console anyway.
That's a really good point. That's a very good point that I didn't even consider. Yeah, they were trailblazers.
Yeah,
as you say, you know, they did all this stuff for the first time. Nowadays in games, there are so many tropes that do not elicit the emotion that I think the developers are trying to get across anymore, just because we're so used to them. Like, you're being chased by a thing from a fixed camera angle. Hold one direction in a linear corridor. It's like I am not in any danger here. As long as I just run and don't stop.
Yeah.
And that doesn't get my heart rate up or anything like that. I do remember, actually, I didn't play it, of course, but I did watch my friend play The Evil Within. And there was a bit at the start where you're chased by, I think, a chainsaw man or some kind of butcher. Again, kind of cliche.
Yeah.
But it was a little more open-ended. Like, there wasn't just run in a straight line. And it was quite scary because it's like, oh God, what do I do and where does it want me to go? And it's like, we don't want you to go anywhere. You just need to escape. And it's like, oh Christ. That was a slight twist on the norm that made it a little more scary. Whereas, you know, all games do this. Uncharted constantly has you running away from things at various points and you just hold down and like hold, you know, fire your gun or whatever. And horror games do it all the time where you've got to run away from stuff. But it doesn't, I suppose, to quote the meme, it doesn't hit right. You know, it doesn't hit right anymore because we're so used to it. But yeah, I think we were spoiled because those games were amazing. But speaking in a current day sense, the uncanny valley is really tough to cross. Older games could get away with being muddy and janky and murky and a little bit rough around the edges because it sort of added to the fear of the unknown because it was sort of strange looking. It's sort of like how there are lots of videos about how horror films are better on VHS than they are on Blu-ray because it's crap. It looks rubbish and it makes it harder to see things in the background and in the darkness. And yeah, it's just inherently a spookier way to watch horror films. So when you're watching The Thing on Blu-ray, it's still very good, but it's not quite as good as it was on VHS, which sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
That's true. I've never heard that point being made, but that is very true. Yeah.
So that they had that going for them at least, that, you know, PS1, Resident Evil 2 PS1 zombies were the scariest thing I had ever seen.
Oh yeah, they really were.
Resident Evil 2 remake zombies, they look like zombies. I've been killing those for 20 years. You know, I'm not overly fussed by them. I still think that game was great, but it removed all tension for me, especially in Resident Evil 3 remake, which, as we've discussed, was a really good remake and a solid game, but it was a remake of a game that just was not as good as Resident Evil 2 was. So inherently, it wasn't as good of a game. There were no moments in that game where I was scared, ever. And I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm really cool and brave and have great hair, you know. I'm saying that because I was able to walk into every room very slowly with a gun. And my sort of peril levels were completely equatable to my ability to shoot zombies with a gun, which I know I'm good at doing. And I know I can do that. So I was never really frightened. So games sort of do have 20 years, 25 years worth of baggage where they're relying on tropes that have been done before, so you know what you're coming to expect. But at the same time, they have to look incredible, and they can't be even remotely wonky like Man of Medan. You know, because if that game came out in the late 90s, everyone would lose their minds about how amazing it was. But now it's just tired and poorly written. And I mean, Resident Evil 1 was poorly written.
Oh,
but
absolutely,
it was good for the time. Whereas now, games need to be immaculate. And I think that's really a real challenge. I still think there's great horror games coming out, but they tend to be smaller indie titles like FNAF that try new things. Big budget horror games, they do still come out, but they don't really exist anymore like they did in the PS2 and PS1 era.
Yeah, I think there's no hard and fast rules in terms of, you know, as much as I made the point that Resi and Silent Hill are remembered now, not because they were right place, right time, but because they were good quality. There are things about both of those games that weren't so good quality, or certainly, like, looking back on them now, they weren't. Maybe at the time we forgave them for having Jill Sandwich and so on. But, you know, so it was a bit of both. I think there definitely was an element of, you know, just being a trailblazer helps. But even if you look at it nowadays as well, I don't think it's enough that Resident Evil or Silent Hill or any other big name horror franchises have a legacy, and therefore whenever the next game comes out, they are going to be good and successful. Like, that's not a given. They still have to work hard. Mm-hmm. And I think Resi 7 was a terrifying game. Nothing to do with the fact that it was Resident Evil. In fact, it wasn't very Resident Evil. It was first person. There weren't proper zombies in it.
Until the end. And then it kind of went a bit Resident Evil.
It did. There was like a secret lab, and yeah, it definitely got a bit Resident Evil. But, you know, for the real scary bits in the first sort of two-thirds, it wasn't very Resident Evil, but it was very scary, I thought. And, you know, likewise, I think with the Resi remakes, there are parts of those games that I don't think relied on the originals. I think some of the things I loved the most about, say, Resident Evil 2 remake was, like, the sound design of the zombies. I thought the noises that they made were just horrible. That was probably, like, the worst thing for me, almost. Like, in the like your first right on the when you walk into the police station, you go down that corridor.
Yeah,
that
you
was
have to
pitch
crawl
black.
Under the barrier that doesn't open properly.
Yeah, there's like water. It's like a flooded pitch black corridor. And for me, there was this lady zombie in there who was always there. She kept seeing me to get back up again every time I went past, or maybe I didn't have any ammo at the time and I was having to run past her like four times. And she just happened to be one of the zombies that had like the worst voice ever. Like, it was horrible. And that corridor quickly became my least favorite in the whole game, just because the scary lady lived there and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's always elements of being the right place at the right time, having a good legacy, and being of good quality. And I think all games have to juggle bits of that. You can't rely on any one thing, really.
Mm-hmm. There's so many cool things that certain games have done over the years that have never really come together into a proper experience that I think really need to. And obviously, it all goes back to our good friend and best friend of Jeff Keighley, Hideo Kojima, where he likes to break the fourth wall.
Mm.
So, you know, all the Out of Bound discoveries about, what's it called, PT, about is it Lisa? Is she called Lisa? I can't remember what she's called.
I think so, yeah.
Spooky lady. Yeah. She's always following you, and that's why you can always hear her, but you never see her until she wants to be seen. How, reportedly, when you leave it paused for long enough, she will just break through the menu and grab you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the really clever stuff in there would have made... I know everyone laments the loss of what Silent Hills could have been, but there's so much cool stuff in there. Then there's that Steam game that I honestly can't remember the name of, that was in a recent list that I did on the channel.
Right.
Where it will... I think you're playing some unicorn game or something, but the story, the meta story is that the devil... or some sort of demon has hacked into it, and it will.
Oh yeah,
he's corrupting it while you're playing
it. A weird art style, hasn't it? It's like a black and white. I think it was a black and white side scrolly thing.
It's a side scrolly thing. I'm not entirely sure, but there's stuff that game does where it will send you Steam messages pretending to be people from your friends list, it will set while you're playing. And it will send you like really unsettling messages, like they'll pop up in the corner, and it's just stuff like that, especially with the new consoles and the new things that they can do, would be just a whole other level of why am I doing this to myself? But it's stuff that you couldn't do in the 90s that we've been retreading for the past 20 years. And again, that's not to say that there have been no good horror games since then. There have been some great horror games. How Mr. X was realized in Resi 2 Remake was phenomenal. Yeah. So, so good. But there's just so many more things that horror games could do today if they were sort of in the limelight the way that they used to be, which they sadly aren't. There's only one or two really big horror franchises that release semi-regularly now.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, boy.
Well, that was our big discussion, so yeah, thanks seemingly. For coming, everyone.
It's time to move on, though, to a smaller discussion about the games that we have been recently playing. It's called... What are we playing?
Whoop.
Whoop.
Whoop. That's a Borat whoop. Impression, because Borat's relevant now again. Have you seen it's the new Borat?
No, I've not.
Oh,
no.
That's very good.
Is it?
I really enjoyed it. It made me laugh quite a lot. Which, I don't know, it says a lot about me. I didn't think that Borat impressions ever went out of style. I always think it's funny to say my wife, just purely because of how much it annoys people.
Sure.
My wife. Peter, what is your game?
I've played a couple of games a little bit. I've been away for like 4 days. So
in a cabin in the woods?
In a cabin in the woods, indeed. I've only had like a couple of days at home since the last podcast was recorded. So not much time to play stuff. However, just before I went away, played a little bit more Crash 4 in my own time.
Nice.
Didn't end up streaming it this week because I've had time off and there's so much to do in these last couple of... That's the problem when you take holiday, isn't it? You just end up working twice as much when you get back
you
or before you go.
Do.
So I didn't stream it, but I did play a little bit of it last week in my own time. Just sort of working my way through, trying to grab some gems and stuff. Don't really know how long I'm going to keep playing it. I've not played many of the inverted levels still, so I've kind of got all of that yet to do. One thing I have done, though, I think since we last did a podcast, I don't think I've talked about this, maybe I have, is find all of the, I think I have told you this, for all of the VHS tapes and play through all of the levels that are set in 1997, 98.
Nice.
So I've completed those. And I was hoping there might be a little sort of reward for doing it at the end. There kind of wasn't really. There was just a little bit of dialogue that like gave you an idea of, oh, okay, so that's sort of how that happened or how that ended. But no sort of... I really hope there might be a little cutscene or something based on the context of what the last level is about. But in any case, I enjoyed them all. It's something I really like in the older Crash games, just the side-scrolly bounce on TNTs and work out puzzles and timings and things. Like that's super fun, just stuff that's built entirely out of boxes, you know, no regular platforms to land on at all. So that, yeah, I really enjoyed that. But the other thing I did play last week, and I played a little bit since I've been back as well, is Two Point Hospital, which has been super fun. We were very kindly sent a code for the new Culture Shock DLC by Sega, or the PR who represent them. I don't know. And
it came directly from Sega.
Came directly from Sega. Wow, you've got an in at Sega.
We've got an in, Peter.
We have, but I mean, you did the talking. Wow.
Yeah. I suppose. Thank you. It was all me.
It was all you. So that's been super fun. That game's just lovely to play, isn't it? Like, as I said in our Quipscope that we did about it, the as well as being sent a code for the DLC, they very kindly gave us a code for the base game as well, because I have not played it. And God, it's just like Theme Hospital, but in the best way. Like, it's you're able to jump straight into that game without any sort of tutorial or guide. If you've played Theme Hospital to kind of any degree. And I think that's a really good thing. I don't think it's just a sort of rip-off or whatever, because it's got its own identity. It's very much a modern-style game. You know, Theme Hospital was isometric, and you could only... you know, there were like four camera angles you could flip between. But this game, you know, you've got full 360 camera. You can zoom in and out. It's got this very enjoyable aesthetic. You can place things very specifically at angles, and they don't, you don't have to snap things to a grid. So it's all very, you can really make the hospital that you want to make. And the Culture Shock DLC is super fun as well. Like, you know, I got it all in one go. I'm just spoiled for choice as to what to play, but it's very clever. It's nice not to just have them, as I said again in the quip script, not to just have things thrown at you like, here's some more benches, couple more diseases,
couple of benches, get those.
Here's like one new room, and that's it. It's not just all of that, which is great, of course, having all this new stuff to play with, but like themed levels, you know. So there's the one with the actor who's trying to learn how to be a doctor for a doctor, like a medical TV show he's going to be in.
Is his name Derek one, something?
Roderick Cushion.
Roderick Cushion, that's it.
Yeah, and the festival, the sort of kind of fairground kind of thing with a music venue and burger vans and muddy people and stuff. That's super fun. I've not got onto the third one yet, but that's that. I'm sure that will be equally interesting. But yeah, it's nice to have these levels that are very much have their own identity and their own objectives. It's not just here's a new hospital. Might be quite hard because there's going to be like loads of, you know, helicopters bringing in like air crash victims or whatever. Like, you know, you would have that on theme hospital where it's just like, yeah, halfway through this is going to be like a pandemic or something, and you got to deal with it. But you know, those were things, they were mechanics you were already used to, but they were just being thrown at you in degrees that were hard to deal with, whereas these new levels with Culture Shock are kind of, yeah, very unique. It's not just this is going to be hard, this is going to be different, which is, it's fun, it's good, I love it.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
What have you been playing, Ben?
Well, I've been playing that Spooky Warzone.
Spooky Warzone,
yes. It's called The Haunting of Verdansk, which is the map that the Warzone, Call of Duty Warzone, takes place in, Verdansk.
Man of Verdansk,
very nice. Spooky Warzone, there's a couple of new timed modes. In fact, I think there might be three. One of them, you can only go into it in teams of three, though, unfortunately, which means our usual team of four couldn't play together, which was a bit of a shame. But one of them is basically just Warzone at night, which is just sort of a twist enough that made it kind of interesting and new, because it's always daytime whenever you drop into that map. But nighttime was quite a fun twist. But it feels like they sort of hacked these modes together, which I do get the impression whenever there's a special mode, it's sort of just hacked together kind of roughly. Because when you go into a building, it's the brightest thing in the world. Like the screen it's like, oh, Jesus. And when you look outside, it's pitch black. But then as soon as you step outside, it's still pitch black for like 3 seconds. And then it fades up and it looks so much brighter outside than it did when you were inside. So it's a little wonky, but it's pretty cool. And sort of as a base level of spooks for this night mode, you will occasionally see ghostly apparitions in windows and like just around you, sort of blue specters just appear and then disappear. If you go down into the subways, there are ghost trains that just go and zoom past.
Oh my gosh.
There's occasionally just spooky noises. When you open, boxes to get guns and stuff out of them, it will sometimes explode into sort of confetti and Halloween colors, and other times it will actually do a literal jump scare, like a loud spooky jump scare where a ghost apparition will appear on your screen, full screen, and just go at you. So that's cool. Haven't had that happen to me yet, which I feel is actually pretty lucky, because I didn't know it existed until I read an article about how streamers were being just all terrified of it, because it just happened at random intervals. The other mode, which is way more fun, is called Zombie Royale, which is what it says when you're dropping in. If you die, you'll come back as a zombie. And it takes it very seriously, even though it's ridiculous. And when you die, you do come back as a zombie. And the gas outside of the circle doesn't hurt you. You can do a massive jump. You also have a gas grenade and like an EMP that you can trigger. And your goal when you're a zombie is to collect two sort of, they look like EpiPens on the map. They're marked as purple, and they're right. dropped when human players die. And you need two of those, and then you will redeploy as a human. So obviously, as the game goes on, and there's more and more zombies trying to become humans, there's fewer and fewer humans. So it's just this massive as the game comes to a close. There's like three humans and about 20 zombies all falling over each other to try and kill them to redeploy, because how you win is just being the last human standing, essentially, or the last team right. standing. So at any time, if someone can get two vials, they could redeploy and steal the win, essentially. So it's a really fun game mode and a nice twist, and I'm really enjoying it. And again, I'm going to be sad when it's gone, because they always take away the nice stuff.
yeah, every time.
Just when we're starting to enjoy it. So that's really good. The other one is I looked at Mass Effect Andromeda and I thought, no. And I've started Days Gone, finally.
Okay.
The sort of pretty good PlayStation exclusive, Ride to Hell Retribution. I keep calling it Death Stranding because I keep forgetting the name Days Gone, because it's not a very good name.
No.
It's all right.
It looks all right.
I'm enjoying it enough in that I'm engaged and want to play it through to conclusion, and I'll probably go for the platinum as well. It's not up to the standard of a normal sort of PlayStation exclusive that I would expect. You know, it's not up to the standard I would expect of them. I think Ghost of Tsushima did a much better job with an open world exclusive PlayStation game than this did.
Yeah.
But that being said, the story is interesting enough. I like the characters and the act. It's really well acted, and there's like a cutscene every blooming 5 minutes. It just keeps cutting back to them. But the problem is that there's a lot of loading screens, like almost all the time. And when you die, the checkpoints are really unfair. It's really janky. I've had two missions completely bug out on me, and I've Googled the mission title and it autofills with glitch. You know, takes me back to an article or a forum post from 200 days ago or 300 days ago. And it's like, wow, so this is still, I'm playing a multiple patched version. You know, a good year and a bit after it came out, and it's still having these issues. I've fallen through the world. I've had areas load with no textures. I have fallen off my bike just like sideways slightly and just died because of it. The bike is the heaviest vehicle known to man. It controls not well. It can be a real pain in the ass. So much so that in a scripted piece of gameplay for a story mission where you can't take control, but you're the main character, Deacon St. John, cool name, is just driving along a path with someone on the back of his motorbike. When he's going around tight corners, because it's scripted, just like the worst game that we played yesterday for this week, Peter, at the time of recording, the motorbike will slide horizontally sideways to make sure that he can get round the corners smoothly, which if that isn't an indictment of how this game controls from a vehicle's perspective, I don't know what is. But it's a world where it's a world of convenience, basically, for the purpose of the plot of this game. Everything seems to be happening from it's a global pandemic, this zombie virus, this freaker virus, as they call them. And everything seems to have happened within like a 5 square kilometer radius. Everything related to this worldwide pandemic happened here. So it's all very inconvenient. For some reason, nobody drives cars and everybody rides the loudest vehicle known to man, in a world where even in a gameplay sense, sound makes a big difference. You know, how loud you are will attract things. But as I said, I am enjoying it, and I'm glad that I've finally gotten around to playing it. It's sort of the perfect game to fit in before the next-gen consoles get here.
Yeah.
And as I said, I am actually enjoying it. I just think there's a lot of stuff that's not up to par with it that I really wish was better. And the hordes, you know, the thing that they showed off the most, where you know, about 100 different zombies come piling after you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are really impressive, and they are fun. They can be frustrating because when one of them hits you, you go, oh, and you do a big stumble, so the next one can hit you, and you go, oh, and right. then you just die. And it's like, I don't feel like that's very well balanced because it basically means you can't get touched, which isn't really how that should work, I don't feel, in a game.
But
it's rough around the edges, and it's still rough around the edges, but I will continue to play it, and it's better than Mass Effect Andromeda, I think, anyway. So there we go. And it's also appropriate because it's spooky and also about a pandemic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. If anything, that makes it spookier because it could happen to you. Hopefully not.
It could. It genuinely could.
The F-Fire, Freaker, did you
freakers,
say they're called?
Yes, they call them Freakers.
They're coming. 2021 will be the year of the Freaker virus, and we'll all miss 2020, just like we all missed 2016. Remember when everyone died in 2016?
Yeah, that genuinely happened. It's strange
because...
All
those celebrities.
My life got better in 2016.
Yeah.
And everything else went terrible. So I don't know. I'm sorry, everyone, I suppose.
Yeah. Big apologies. We're finally on to question two, I've just noticed.
Yes, so, we are.
It's going well. We're getting through this podcast super quick, of course, as always. Would you like to read it, Ben?
I certainly would. This is from Odie Lazus, which I've always pronounced it Odie Lazus, but I don't know if it's Odie Lazus.
I checked this once. I think it is Lazus.
It is. Yeah. Okay, well, that's fine then. Hi, Ben and Peter. Odie Lazus here. With us being well and truly in the spookum season, I was wondering what elements you consider to be most important to building effective horror in games. Is it the oppressive uneasiness of facing our own flaws, like James Sunderland in Silent Hill 2? Is it the feeling of futility in facing a much more powerful foe that is heck-bent of destroying you, like Ari's Mr. X or Nemesis? Or even just the simple liberal smearing of strawberry jam on the walls that was the MO of Dead Space? Would love to hear your pro-gamer expert opinions. Happy Halloween, and oh my goodness, what's that behind you? No! Rip Odie Lazus, who I'm assuming has passed away there due to Monster. What do you think, Peter? Yeah. What is it that builds spooks for you?
I think different games build spooks for me in different ways, in their own effective ways. You know, I think I like the idea of Silent Hill. I've never really played through much Silent Hill. I played Silent Hill 1 a fair amount, but I've not played any of the others. But I like the idea that the enemies there are based on people's sort of psychological issues or fears or insecurities and things. You know, some games aren't gory like Dead Space and are just as spooky as gory games like Dead Space. I think to me, there's probably two things overall, though, that like work the best. I think the overall kind of aesthetic of the game world, I think, works well for me, which I think is partly why I loved Little Nightmares so much, because I think it was just so... It's like the whole game had that kind of children's voices singing in an empty nursery with the lights off kind of spook.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't big monsters. It did have big horrible monsters in it, but the overall vibe of the thing was just this sort of...
No, I don't like it.
You know, all that kind of vibe. And also, I think it says a lot that Resi 4, which is not only one of my favorite horror games of all time, but one of my favorite games ever, I think. I loved it more in the first and second areas compared to the third. And without spoiling it too much for you, Ben, because I know you're thinking of eventually playing it properly. Mm. The third area is, I don't know, it's just a bit more... It's a bit more Resident Evil 4, 5, 6, if you see what I mean. It's a bit more action-driven.
Okay.
There's, like, people with guns and weapons, and there's a lot of, like, explosions and things. Whereas the first area is the very creepy village. The second area is a creepy castle. Not as creepy as the village, I don't think. But You know, I think the reason that I love The Village so much is it's just so eerie. And you even get the idea, get the feeling that if I got really, really lost on holiday in my hire car up some mountain somewhere, I could actually end up here. And I really like the idea that the quote-unquote zombies in that game aren't zombies at all. They're just kind of, they're people who are mad. Mm-hmm. I know it's because they've got a parasite in their head that was like put in there, but ultimately they're just these people who are clever enough to actually work together. You know, I think one of the first lists I did on Triple Jump, in fact, the first list I did, I think, was like the scariest Resident Evil monsters or moments or something. And I gave a fairly high rank in the list just to, I think, The Village in general. And some people might say, I mean, what, compared to the rest of the Resident Evil series, that's just some people in a village. Why is that so scary to you? But there's this shot where when you first get to the main village fight at the beginning that me and you played on a rules boss once, mm-hmm. Leon barricades himself inside a house, and there's this very fleeting shot. The camera's like focused on him, and just in your periphery, if you look, there's a window in this building, and you see two zombies run. Well, they're not zombies. Two Ganados run past, carrying a ladder together, and that like scared me so much when I played this the first time, because I thought, oh my god, these aren't just like two umbrella zombies can't carry a ladder together. They can't work together in that way. But it shows like all these villagers outside like talking to each other, and they're working together. They're putting a ladder up the window, and I was like, oh man, this is like a whole different thing. These are just like actually quite clever people who can come at you. They're not just like mindless zombies. Mm-hmm. So I think that definitely has an effect for sure. So yeah, the overall vibe of an area of a game world, I think, and the sort of implications of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've just written silence.
Oh, okay.
Like walking through an area that's just completely silent, mm-hmm. with limited ambient noise, maybe just your footsteps and no music. Because for me, it's the fear of the unknown that mm-hmm. that is scariest to me in a game. Fallout has successfully pulled off some quite scary moments for me. When you're exploring, especially some of the spookier buildings, when you're exploring some of these buildings and it's just quiet, you know, when music is happening in games, you know something is about to happen. Sort of like the violins, like you know something's about to happen. When something is running at you, you know something is happening. It might initially be spooky that something has appeared out of nowhere and started running at you, but you are aware that you are not alone. And you can presumably shoot it or run away, you know? Walking through an area in a game where it's dark and completely quiet is, for me, just the spookiest thing.
Right,
I find it so unnerving, you know, just to be completely isolated like that in a game. The Last of Us Part 2 did it a couple of times, where it was just quiet. There was no music. Ellie wasn't quipping to herself. You were in some really horrible, frightening place. There were no enemies, and the game didn't do anything. Like, there was no jump scare, and it was it just did that to mess with you and to play with your expectations, because you were on edge. Like, something is going to happen. This is uncomfortable, and I am nervous and scared. And then nothing happened. And I thought that was just so brilliant. And so many games can do that and have done that. That for me, successfully building effective horror in games comes down to its use of almost nothing, basically. The lack of a horror stimuli is sometimes scarier than having a zombie there. So for me, silence. Just the lack of sound and music makes a huge difference in those kinds of games.
Yeah, that's just reminded me, maybe the thing that I actually like the most or hate the most in a way with horror games is I can think of several examples that are probably my favorite moments in their respective games, which is suggestions from NPCs that what you're about to experience, they've already experienced it and they are completely messed up by it. Mm-hmm. So there's actually a scare. One of the levels in Halo is deliberately done in a way that's meant to be spooky. It's when the Flood is first introduced, which is, again, a parasitic zombie-making thing. And you walk into this area, there's like blood everywhere and there's all these dead enemies and dead humans. And you walk around this corner and suddenly you start getting shot and you're like, whoa, what's happening? And it's the sound of, it's a human weapon, it's a pistol. And there's this guy who's got his back up against the wall, he's like lying down on the floor and he's shooting you and he's going, oh, stay back, you're not going to turn me into one of those things. No, stop it, stay away. And he's shooting you. And you can either just sort of like walk past him or you can put him out of his misery. But and that whole thing, you know, it's like the woman with the pram in BioShock and you can just see her shadow. Mm-hmm. And she's like talking to her pram, which is actually a gun in the pram.
The biggest gun I've ever seen.
Yeah, an enormous gun. And just seeing her sort of clearly out of her mind and knowing that like whatever this place is that I found myself in, it is not good. And I think maybe the one that got me the worst out of any game was in the opening of Dead Space. You arrive on this orbital mining station in space. I guess you've probably not played Dead Space.
No, I'm familiar with the opening of it, though.
Yeah, and it's very atmospheric. I don't think you've yet come across any enemies. Maybe you have at that point, but it's very early on. And in just like the BioShock lady, you round this corner and lit up against the wall is the shadow of someone who you can't see, but you can see their shadow on the wall. And as you approach, there's this like regular clonking sound, just this bonk, bonk, bonk. And you notice that the shadow is like rocking back and forth in time with the bonk. And when you get up to the source of the shadow, it's just this guy banging his head against the wall, like bang, bang. His head's all like bloody. And then when you step up to a certain trigger point, he does this like one last smack and just tops himself by smashing his face into this wall.
Right.
And it's like, wow, okay. What has happened here that this man has just done that to himself? What am I walking into? And it's that whole, it's building that tension. It's not giving you the zombie. It's not giving you the monster. It's saying, these people have seen the monster that you're about to encounter for the next 6 to 8 hours. And this is what they are doing to themselves. So there you go. Enjoy. Hope you have fun.
Yeah.
I really love that kind of tension building.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a bit of a weird thing to do, really. Bang your head against the wall until you're dead.
It is. That's unusual, I would say.
It's very unusual and strange. Maybe we should do something weird and strange and unusual, too.
You reckon? What about... What about spooky weird news?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that.
Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
It's weird news time. Welcome, everyone, to Weird News. Peter, have you got some weird, spooky news for me? It's or not, just weird news?
Yeah, it's not spooky. I mean, maybe it's a bit spooky for the implications, but it's something that we already kind of know is a problem. This is from PCGamer.com, written by Sean Prescott, who says, Wasteland 3 was almost banned in Australia due to, quote, Rocky Mountain moose grass. Okay. Subtitle says, but the offending marijuana stand-in was eventually removed for everyone. Okay.
Right.
Wasteland 3 is a game with swearing parrots, cyborg chickens, a goat cannon, and lots of other perfectly sensible post-apocalyptic phenomena. It was also going to be a game with Rocky Mountain moose grass in it, which is exactly as sus as it sounds. It was basically marijuana. No big deal, you say, but it was a big deal for the Australian Classification Board, which initially banned the game due to its presence. As reported by Kotaku, the Australian Classification Board's... this is Kotaku Australia, by the way, if you click the link. I don't think it's been posted on the global site. As reported by Kotaku, the Australian Classification Board's annual report has lifted the lid on why Wasteland 3 was refused classification and then later granted an R18 plus rating back in February. By now, you probably know why. It's because in an early build, you could smoke Rocky Mountain moose grass for a temporary skill buff. Specifically, it granted an increased 2% strike rate for 350 seconds. And of course, there were weed jokes attached to its item description. Excuse me. According to the ACB's report, Rocky Mountain Moosegrass was not allowed due to the game's... due to the game's 1A clause, which forbids any game that depict express or otherwise deal with matters of sex, drug misuse or addiction, crime, cruelty, violence, or revolting or abhorrent phenomena in such a way that they offend against the standards of morality, decency, and propriety generally accepted by reasonable adults to the extent that they should not be classified.
Wow. That's... yeah, that sounds like an overstep just a bit.
Yeah,
the fact that it requires reasonable adults to identify what reasonable adults shouldn't be allowed to have is...
reasonable like adults. God, just, it's not moral, decent or proper. So that's what the game was initially banned in Australia for, and that's why no one gets to smoke Rocky Mountain moose grass anywhere in the world, because it was removed from all versions of the game to appease Antipodean sensibilities. It's a bit silly, and the board seems to agree. It's baracking for video... I've never seen that word in my life. Baracking.
Oh.
What does that mean? It's spelt the same way as Barack Obama. Provide soldiers with accommodation in a building or set of buildings. Oh, barracking.
Oh, because Urban Dictionary has a very different definition of barracking.
Right. I just didn't recognise the barrack bit in there because I've never seen it with ing at the end, so I just thought it was pronounced baracking rather than barracking. But okay, it's barracking for video game classifications to be treated under the same umbrella as films, and it's perfectly okay to smoke weed in movies, says Sean Prescott. So that's that. Basically, the game had its Rocky Mountain moose grass removed from all versions because of Australia. The Australian Classification Board saying...
Australia!
It's, you know, reasonable adults don't consider that to be of, you know, a sufficient level of decency and propriety and morality. So, there you go.
For goodness sake.
That's the spooky bit, is the implication that this kind of thing can happen.
Yeah, that is spooky. How weird. My story comes from Polygon.com. Okay. And once again, we'll repeat it the second week in a row. Second week in a row.
Yeah.
Kotaku's website, what have they done? Simply cannot browse their news anymore. It's just not possible. They've completely redesigned it and it's awful.
Yeah.
It's so bad. Anyway, this is from Polygon. The closest we'll get to a new Silent Hill right now is World of Tanks.
Okay.
That's the headline. Wargaming's free-to-play combat MMO, World of Tanks, is leaning hard into Halloween this year by collaborating with two of the original creators of the Silent Hill series, artist and monster designer Masahiro Ito and musician Akira Yamaoka. While we sit on our hands waiting for that long-rumored Silent Hill reboot or for Konami to do something, anything, with the franchise, World of Tanks is our current best option for otherworldly horror vibes.
Oh.
World of Tanks' Halloween event includes a PvE cooperative mode in which players will battle armored monster tanks of a mystery origin as a team of five. In the mysterious town of Myrnie 13, or Myrnie 13 perhaps, players will need to battle waves of enemy forces, collect a resource called Miriam, and that's my grandma's name, it's not, and deliver it to the structure known as Magnus. Surviving players will then be transported to a parallel dimension where an increasingly thick fog will envelop the town.
Oh, it sounds
familiar, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. The event will include new 3D skins that players can purchase, which have been designed by Masahiro Ito, the creator of Silent Hill's iconic Pyramid Head. Mm. Those tank skins are rusted and smothered in barbed wire and otherwise pretty Silent Hill-y. Akira Yamaoka, responsible for the Silent Hill series' signature soundtracks, wrote a hauntingly ambient track that plays in the event hangar, according to Wargaming. And then it just says, watch the video below for more info. So there you go. You want some Silent Hill? Time to log into World of Tanks, my dude.
Wow. How unexpected.
Yeah, it's a strange team up, but World of Tanks has FU money.
Yeah.
They really do. Like, they do. It's disgustingly... The creator of that game is disgustingly wealthy. It's obscene.
Aren't they also a disgusting person as well? Or is that,
I don't know that they're a disgusting person. I don't think I'm allowed to say anything.
Okay. Okay.
I don't think they've done any Ubisoft-esque stuff that I'm aware of.
Oh, no. No, absolutely not. No, I just... I don't know.
No, I don't think we can get into it. I think it gets quite into liability territory.
Sure.
Let's just say obscenely wealthy. Obscenely wealthy.
Mm.
And we'll leave it at that. I don't think we need to cut it out. I think it's just everyone should be aware of just how wealthy these people are.
Very wealthy.
Very wealthy. So much so that they managed to get two of the video game's greatest creatives to provide something to a tank game that's free to play. So there we are. That's my weird news. Let's move on to another question, Peter.
Let's. Yeah, this is question three from Duncan's Wilson. Thank you, Duncan's Wilson. Good questions to the podcast is Duncan's Wilson.
Yeah, Duncan's Wilson is always appearing. What a great Wilson.
What a great Wilson. Dear Bunyip Ben and Poltergeist Peter, I'm no fan of survival horror games, and even the clickers in The Last of Us send my anxiety levels beyond safety parameters. I'm much more a fan of the silly spook games like Luigi's Mansion. Are there any spooky but not terrifying games that you enjoy? Many thank, and have a lovely All Saints Day, that bit, the day after All Hallows Eve, for everyone that forgets about. That's not what it says. No, that's not
what?
That bit, the day after All Hallows Eve that everyone forgets about.
Okay.
I don't really know why it says that bit at the start. That really threw me off.
That bit, comma.
That bit,
all,
comma.
All Saints Day is when we all listen to All Saints.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I can't remember any of their songs at all.
Yeah.
But there we go. Did Girls Aloud? They're the same ones, aren't they? They're the same people.
Probably
Atomic
Sugar
Kitten.
Babes. Yeah.
Sugar Babes, Atomic Kitten, All Saints, Girls Aloud. There's the Saturdays, cause. The Cause,
Bewitched.
Are they in that group? Would you put them in that group?
No, not really.
I wouldn't put them in that group.
Like Irish people singing Irish songs.
What's the other ones where it's got that girl from the Saturdays in it, and they're another band now, but they also do loads of presenting. They're on loads of different things. What are they called?
Uh,
oh, Christ. Christ.
Oh, yeah. A Little Mix. That's not
Little Mix, that's
not
it.
Got a girl from the Saturdays in it, I don't think.
Yeah,
but they
do
a lot of presenting.
Okay, yeah, Little Mix. They're all the same. All their music is the same music.
Hearsay.
Hearsay. They're all the same band.
Mm.
I've never seen them in the same room.
No, you're right.
So I'm convinced they're all the same person.
Isn't Sugar Babes like Trigger's Broom, to coin a phrase that will only mean something to some people?
Yeah, not
where
me.
None of the original members exist anymore. I don't mean they're all dead, but...
Right, they're not in the band. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
honestly, it's never really been something I'm bothered about.
I'm pretty sure Sugar Babes now no longer has an original member of Sugar Babes in it, but they're still called Sugar Babes.
Well, aren't they now the Honey Babes? Because they can't put sugar... They can't put sugar in it.
Yeah. You know?
Just like the cereal. They had to take it out, so now it's just honey.
Mm.
Honey jackets.
Little lineas of wheat dressed in little honey jackets.
Shut up, Timothy, and eat your honey cereal.
Mm.
What's happening?
I mean, I'm Googling Sugar Babes.
Okay.
I'm sure there's like an actual table on... Yeah, there is. There's a graphic on the Wikipedia page to show who is and isn't still a member of Sugar Babes.
Is there a line graph that shows the sort of correlation and causation of like reducing members of official original Sugar Babes versus quality of music or frequency of music?
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. Yeah, they're all gone, aren't they?
Well, they're all back now in 2020. Look, the original Sugar Babes have reunited at the very end of that graph. But towards 2012, it was a completely different band.
So we started off with Siobhan Donaghy, Mutya Buena, and Keisha Buchanan. And then, yeah, you're right. By 2010, we had Jade Ewan, Amel Bereba, and Heidi Range. But now, in this, the cursed year, the original lineup have returned. And I don't know what this means, but no. I don't think it's good.
Spooky horror. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What? All Saints. That's how we got into that.
That's
so,
the one, yeah.
I really like Goosebumps Escape from Horrorland on PC. It's a really good game. I actually saw a really in-depth write-up that someone did about that game fairly recently. It's known to some people as the Goosebumps game with Jeff Goldblum in it.
Oh, you know? Yeah, I know it from that.
Yeah, it's got lots of live-action like recordings in it. It's one of those games where, you know, you move around the world and it just plays different clips using live-action actors and actresses. But interestingly, in this big write-up I saw, and I'm afraid I can't provide citation because it was a few weeks ago now, it said that it was the first... I think it said it was the first computer game to feature... To feature Jeff Goldblum. Well, I'll pretend that that's where I was going with that sentence.
Okay.
Because I've now forgotten what... It had some kind of cutting edge, this game, and I don't remember what it was.
Was
but
it
anyway.
Geese and or Bumps?
It was the first game to have Geese, Bumps, and Jeff Goldblum in it,
would you believe? Wow.
Amazing. But that's a super fun game. Obviously, it's sort of aimed at young teens, so it's not very spooky. But there are actually a couple of moments in it that are genuinely quite scary, because the costumes are really good in it. So, you know, graphically, you're looking at real stuff. It's not, despite the fact that it came out in the late 90s, it's not all bitty and terrible and pixely and just textures and sprites. It's live action, so you've got some really good practical effects being used in it. They used green screen, they used an animatronic werewolf, which is very impressive. There's actually footage of them filming that online if you have a look. So it's silly, and the acting in it is a bit bad, and sometimes they flub their line, but they just sort of carried on filming, which is fine. But it's a lot of fun. And if it was easy to get working on PC nowadays, then I would absolutely play it on stream. But it's not easy. I still have my copy. It's a two-disc game.
Whoa, two discs?
Yeah. And I guess if I got like a a Windows 98 emulator going. I might be able to get it working, but it's just difficult, isn't it? It's difficult.
That's a faff.
FNAF. So there's that. I mean, I don't know if that really counts as spooky but not terrifying, given that it's aimed at 13-year-olds. But yeah, I love that game.
I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it does. I went a slightly different route, and I picked games that are sort of not aimed at children, but do have spooky moments in them.
Yeah, yeah.
So The Order 1886, which came out early in the PS4's life cycle, was critically maligned. I thought it was fun, and I liked the story. So there's a bit in it where you have to drop down into the basement of an abandoned hospital. And the one thing that no one can disagree with about that game is that it was beautiful. Like, it's a gorgeous game, really good looking game.
Wonderful world.
Yeah, really interesting. Set in ye olde London times, sort of Victorian era. You're part of an elite force of sort of lichen hunters, you know.
The Round Table.
Exactly, yeah. That's sort of a spiritual successor to the Round Table, a long lineage of hunters and warriors. And, you know, what's his name? Tesla's in it and stuff. It's really cool alternate history sort of setting. And at one point you're going through an abandoned Victorian hospital after hearing reports of some werewolf boys in there. And you have to drop down into a basement, and you look down there, and you do have to drop down because the staircase is gone. So there's no way back out. It's covered in broken glass and blood. And it was just like, I really, really, really don't want to go down there. Please don't make me go down there. You drop down there, you got your crappy little lantern and your Victorian alternate history pistol, and you're just walking through this spooky basement. And I remember that being quite impressively scary, that moment. Obviously, I've spoken before about how Final Fantasy VII has several really unnerving and quite, you know, unsettling moments in it.
Yeah.
Beyond the terrifying opening cutscene where the flower girl looks at the green lights. And finally, the last one I've got down here is Metro Last Light.
Oh, yeah.
Which I really enjoyed. I didn't play the original Metro. And then obviously last year I played Metro Exodus and I really didn't think much of it at all. But Last Light I really enjoyed on PS3. And there's a couple of moments where you're just chucked into a pitch black tunnel with your lighter, and that's it. And, you know, this is a world where mutated sort of humanoid creatures and giant spiders and other scary things exist, and that there's several moments like that with jump scares included that were very spooky. And I know that game isn't exactly the most jovial and enjoyable of games from a levity standpoint, but it certainly sort of delved really deep into horror at times, and I thought it was very effective and really good.
Yeah, I wrote down Limbo, the side-scrolling. Yeah, I thought that was, would you call it a horror game? I mean, it's certainly very macabre
unsettling
and sort of gothic, and there's kind of people hanging from nooses and like crows and spiders and things like that. So it's definitely a creepy game. I love that game so much. It's so atmospheric. I've not played it in a long time, actually. It makes me want to play it again now, just talking about it.
Me neither.
I never got round to playing Inside for my sins. Like, this, I know that it's like really acclaimed by critics and plebs alike.
Yes.
I think it came out at the time when I hadn't yet got myself a PS4. And I sort of never really got round to it. Like, there was a period between having a 360 and a PS4 where I had nothing, basically, and was just playing stuff on PC. And so I kind of missed it at the time. And then, never really thought, oh, now's the time to play Inside. But that looks equally great. But Limbo, I just think is fantastic. And I was really sad when I finished it, and I was hoping there'd be more. And I kind of knew that they wouldn't do a Limbo 2, but that's sort of what Inside was kind of based on, or, you know, it's very similar.
Very similar concept.
So, yeah, I think that's a super spooky game. And I don't just mean the giant spider. Like, I'm not super arachnophobic, so that didn't bother me too much, but just the whole vibe of the thing. Again, it's more just the sort of the atmosphere and seeing things almost in the background while you're making your way through. Like I say, there's sort of bodies hanging up and there's just, yeah, horrible things everywhere you look. Yeah.
And sometimes no music as well, which really adds the tension when you've got this massive, freakishly animated spider silhouette chasing you and there's no fanfare. It's just like, this is it. This is normal. Yeah. This is what you can expect from this game. This isn't even a big moment. Like, oh, God.
And the way it ends as well, like, spoilers for a game that's however many years old, you find yourself back where you started. You, like, fall through this thing and it's like gravity seems to flip a different way and stuff, and then you land and you're like, oh, hang on, this is where I woke up at the beginning of the game. Am I just stuck in limbo, I guess?
Yeah,
just realize that's why it's called Limbo.
Oh, there we are. It really messes with you. There's lots of fun theories and stuff surrounding that game. Great game. Yeah, I haven't thought about that game for a long time.
Yeah, love that game.
Right, Peter, it's time to move on
to something big.
Huge. In fact,
massive.
It's the big discussion. It's time for the big discussion, everybody. Big discussion time. This week, the big discussion comes from Philip Bleed. It's Philip Reed, of course.
Philip Reed.
Silent Hill confronts each game's protagonist with monsters that embody his or her fears, regrets, and insecurities. Good news! I've butchered both. A week-long trip there. Describe the monsters and obstacles that each of you would encounter.
Oh, horrible. Okay, well, maybe we should list our fears to each other, our insecurities, our regrets, and collectively come up with a Silent Hill hell for each other. As a team.
Sounds good.
I mean, in terms of actual just fears. Not kind of conceptual, metaphysical fears, but just things I'm genuinely afraid of. Hate snakes. I don't often come into contact with an octopus, but I really don't like the idea of an octopus being in the room. Mm-hmm. If there was an octopus on the floor in here, even if it was like in the corner, I would be losing my mind because they're just so weird and blobby and horrible. Mm-hmm. I fear. I don't like change, or I think I get very attached to sort of the good old days or the good current days, and I don't like the idea that things are going to change and I'm no longer going to be able to, you know, for example, spend time with certain people in my life, or you know, that one day when I'm 40 or 50, maybe I won't be in this job anymore, or, you know, where am I going to end up living? Maybe I'm going to have to move to the other side of the country for work reasons or for whatever reasons. You know, I don't like change. That really gets to me.
Okay.
I wonder if I've got any regrets as well. I'm trying to think about that. What about you? What are some of your fears, real and non-real?
Well, I didn't like school. I don't know anyone that liked school. Mm. But I think a sort of setting in a school would bring back, not, you know, I wasn't bullied and I didn't have a horrible time. It's just a place that I really have no fond memories of.
Yeah.
And just don't want to go back there. Maybe the NHS building I worked in for 2 years is also a source of horror to me. Being stuck and stranded at a job that you don't enjoy, or, you know, feeling like your life is stuck while everyone around you is moving on and moving away and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Probably a healthy sprinkling of sort of socially awkward moments where I've put my foot in my mouth.
Of course. I've got those.
Or like, you know, romantic failings and stuff in the past. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just a healthy mixture of the stuff that I think all people really have. But I'd probably be chased by fast food monsters, I think.
Oh, God. Yeah?
Yeah.
Why? In what way? Because surely sort of you like fast food.
Demonic kernel.
Right.
You know?
Just a big chicken It's like it was a dead chicken. It then got covered in the special recipe, and now it's alive again, and it's running at you.
Maybe that's my pyramid head. It's coming for me, and it's gonna. It wants to serve me up, like in Little Nightmares, where the people are eating all the food, and it's gonna serve me up to a bigger chicken. should have an octopus man as your pyramid head, or an octopus woman.
Yeah,
Just a maybe, big, frightening, blobby man.
Maybe its tentacles have snake heads at the end.
Oh, yeah, like cobras. Medusa.
I hate cobras the worst. Like, why do they have that? It's just the hood creeps me out even more than any other snake. I don't know why they have the little hood on their head. Stop it. Have that.
While you're making your way around your particular environment, which we've yet to decide, there should be just snake hisses almost constantly. Oh, or just God. Every so often, just loud snake hisses coming from behind doors.
I think in terms of environment, when you said the office building that you worked at, that kind of made me think like something that where I feel so out of my depth. It's not just that I find it boring or don't like it, but I feel like I don't belong here. I'm gonna look like some kind of outsider idiot. Mm-hmm. Is just a corporate environment. I did work experience in like a call center for a hotel supplier. Like
a bad work experience.
Oh, it was so bad. Like my dad worked there, but he didn't work in the call center. He was like in management and stuff. And so I think he was in HR. So he quite enjoyed that job. Like he used to do HR with people, and he was also in charge of like planning events. And they apparently had like quite a nice budget for taking people to team building events and stuff. And they would go like to Europe and do like fun stuff. So he used to talk about how it was a great place to work. And it was like, oh, that sounds really good. Like, you know, you spend all your time, you know, trying to help people feel happier about their job. They come to you with their problems and you give them advice. And then the other time you spend is planning jollies off to Germany or whatever. And then he was like, okay, yeah, if you want to come do some work experience, that's great. And I think he also thought that I would be able to see different departments. And then I just kind of ended up in a call center going, hey, yeah, you want some soap, some little mini soaps for your hotel? Cool. I'll sort some of those out for you. In fact, I didn't end up doing any of that. I just sat there with a second headset listening to other people on the phone. Like, I didn't do any work. I think I just filled in some spreadsheets and shredded some papers. But nice. God, it's not a good blanket rule to have, but just to cover all bases, I kind of tell myself that I never ever want to work in a job where I have to wear a tie or a suit. Because any job where I have to wear a suit or even just a shirt, a nice shirt, is probably in the kind of environment where I feel so out of my depth. I don't understand what targets are. I don't know what sales means. Oh, God, it's just jargon and horrible. Just the thought of it is just, it makes my skin crawl. Just the language that's used there and the mentality that people have. So
you'd be in an office building then?
In an office building with like some sort of snake octopus.
Yeah, chasing you down and just gesturing with its snake arms at charts.
And threatening me that if I don't hit the target on the chart, that something I like at the moment will go away and I will never have it back.
Targets.
So no, targets. That sounds the worst.
So, well, there we are. I think we've sort of invented our own Silent Hills there. I'm in a school. You're in an office building.
You've got a giant chicken that's teaching you lessons, making you maybe come up to the front in front of a whole classroom full of previous lovers.
Yeah.
You've got to do something, and you do a socially awkward thing, and then the chicken says, if you don't get this right, I'm going to serve you up to a bigger chicken.
Yeah. Also, I think a whole classroom, that's a bit of a... I don't think I could fill a whole classroom.
of ex-lovers,
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
A small tutorial.
Yeah, maybe a bathroom, perhaps.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah, that would be awful, genuinely awful.
All if anyone wants to submit art of Ben and I in our respective horrible scenarios.
That would be great.
A wonderful Halloween present for us both.
Tangible, consumable evidence of my worst fears.
Yeah.
All in one. Fantastic. Well, there we go. We've made it to the end of this spooky, spooky Triple Jump podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Let us know what you thought of the things we discussed today. You can do that via the usual channels. But just in case you can't remember, Peter's going to tell you everywhere we are at.
Team Triple Jump. We're on YouTube and Twitch doing content. That's youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. When we're streaming on both of those channels, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Cecil Prumps, Mads the Dactyl, and Trowling Badger. Thank you, mods. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon looks after Facebook. Thank you, Luke. We've got a Patreon, which is patreon.com/Team Triple Jump. Lots of rewards there. You can ask questions on this very podcast. You can get Worst Games Ever 2 days early. You can get exclusive merch and other things. And wow, it's great. Check it out. We've got a Discord, bit.ly/Team Triple Jump. That's modded by Jack and Joe. Thank you, Discord mods. The podcast, if you are watching on YouTube, is available in audio form by going to play.acast.com/s/triple jump. The website is triplej.mup. That's triplju.mp. We've got the shop there. We've got a link to our mods. Our VODs channel, not our mods channel, which is triplej.mup/VODs. We've got a careers tab there, which occasionally is populated with job postings. Not right now, but keep an eye out. You never know when it's going to pop up again. And speaking of the VODs, thank you, as always, to Pat for editing some weekly highlights of our streams.
Definitely. You can follow Peter on Instagram at ThatPeterAustin and on Twitter at ThatPeterAustin. Just me on Twitter at Confused_Dude. Lists every Tuesday and Thursday. Streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream on YouTube. Monday and Friday being the solo streams on Twitch. That's the name of it, isn't it? Worst Games Ever is fortnightly Friday for patrons of a certain tier. Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday. And then we do other shows once every other week. Still there. Leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. Now, this week is a Worst Games Ever week, so there is an episode that will be going up tomorrow for those of you who do not support us at the appropriate tier on Patreon. Please do consider going there, though, and supporting us. It means a lot, and it helps a lot, too.
Indeed.
Oh, just enough time to go through the spooky sponsor one more time. It's the Xbox Series X, the spooky Halloween console edition, limited edition, that makes the sound of one of your ex-partners when you turn it on or when you eject a disc. It's awful, and you can buy it now.
Sounds so bad.
Terrible.
Well, it's probably one of those in your classroom, I think.
No, I don't want it. I don't want that. Okay, we're going now. Have a safe and happy Halloween, everyone, and we will speak to you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.